This episode is about the music in minutes 11 through 15 of Solo, A Star Wars Story, featuring my guest, Samantha Tripp. Hello there, and welcome to Star Wars Music Minute, where we celebrate the music and sound of Star Wars 5 cinematic minutes at a time. I'm Chrysanthi Tan, you can call me Xanthi, and today is all about minutes 11 through 15 of Solo, A Star Wars Story. This is a really interesting excerpt of the film because we see our protagonist, Han Solo. Oh, not Solo yet. We see our protagonist, Han, being recruited into the Empire via a recruitment ad. Later on, we cut to him actually fighting in a battle, and several years have elapsed. The reason this is really interesting musically is because we see a diegetization, hopefully I pronounced that right, of the Imperial March. And today's guest, Samantha Tripp, is actually preparing a talk on this very subject and is going to help us understand what happens when the Imperial March switches into diegetic mode and then back, and what that can tell us about everything. I don't know. Samantha, help me out.
Yeah. I mean, we're mostly looking at like how the fact that the Imperial March becomes diegetic, how that promotes like kind of a rehearing for the audience and reveals possibly the source of the original Imperial March in kind of Edwardian nationalist style music.
Okay, we need to take about 100 steps back. Yeah. So let's just play what we hear here. Okay, short and sweet.
Yep.
So what's so special about that?
I think the thing that probably stands out to most people right away is that it's not, you know, that minor mode militaristic march. It's still a march, but it's in major. It's bright and happy. It's meant to kind of be, you know, propaganda, showing like supporting the Empire, supporting the military, showing it as this positive force. It doesn't have that kind of, it's more string heavy and wind heavy than brass and percussion, like the original Imperial March, as we know and love it. And so it's like this interesting kind of positive, happy version of it in E flat major instead of G minor.
You know, the fact that you pointed out the strings makes me really happy. And it's one thing that really stuck out to me too, because we're used to hearing the Imperial March on, you know, the slow brass or at least, mm-hmm. at least some form of brass. And we will hear that later on in this, like at the end of this set of minutes in the Mimban battle. Well, actually, let me just play a little bit of that. Yeah. So although that's a little bit different from how we are normally hearing the Imperial March because of the sort of Night on Bald Mountain strings in the background, that is more emblematic of the normal Imperial March in terms of the mm-hmm. like lead instrumentation. Now, something about the Imperial recruitment, which is Empire Recruitment is the name on the soundtrack of this cue, and you can only find it on the deluxe edition, but you can also obviously hear it in the film, just the beginning part of it. And in the movie, let me actually play how you hear it in the film too, so that you can hear the way that it's worldized, which is like the sound mixing technique or the sound, I don't know, mixing, would it be mixing or editing? But it's basically making it sound like it is coming from the world, like from the same room, mm-hmm. from the world rather than in the score, which, you know, is often done in diegetic music. So.
Explore
So it's super, super soft. Obviously, you can hear someone speaking on a loudspeaker over that. Mm-hmm. It's very in the background. You can't hear it as present. And it's just like as Han is watching a screen with basically a recruitment ad. So it is very mm-hmm. like in the world. It comes off as really naive almost.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. And it's also interesting that like, with the, I'm assuming it would be the editing more so than the mixing, they kind of make it sound a little bit like it's on an older sort of recording. That kind of has this more, I don't know if gritty is the right word, but has this different sound quality to it than that very pure sound that we get from like the underscore moments.
That is true. Okay. So I guess in our heads, we can think of like a list of things that differentiate it from just hearing the cue in its standard form, mm-hmm. or at least the theme in its standard form. So one way that this version is different is obviously that it's the like major version. It's not like the, I don't know, scary minor. It's not the normal version. It's like this major mm-hmm. version. And we're of course speaking about the quality of like, normally it's G minor, right? So now it's E flat major. Also, there's the fact the instrumentation, so strings and winds are at the forefront instead of low brass. And mm-hmm. then also the recording sounds like it's coming from like crappy loudspeakers.
Which is probably where it's coming from within the world of the movie. So makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. It does make sense. I'm trying to think of, well, can I read something from your abstract?
Yeah, go for it.
Because I think here is something. Okay, so your abstract is called The Sun's Never Set on the Galactic Empire, Recursive References and In-Universe Instances of the Imperial March. And right at the beginning, allowing a non-diegetic theme to slip into the realm of source music is nothing new. And what you mean by source music is music coming from the source that we see on screen. Mm-hmm. While such moments of diegetization provide yet another example of the eminently permeable fantastical gap, their ramifications often run deeper than a blurring of narrational levels. And so here, this is sort of a tease that not only obviously does diegesis kind of break the narrative level, but there's something else that's happening, and you already have referenced it. Because when fictional characters hear their own music, it can provoke a rehearing for the audience. So that's what I want to talk about. What does rehearing mean?
I did write this abstract with my advisor, Frank Lehman. He did most of the writing. And I think what we were going for there is more like how it recontextualizes it and makes us think more about the theme, both in terms of like its structure and the music analysis aspect of it, but also how that theme functions within the world of Star Wars and the politics of Star Wars as well.
I definitely agree with that. Like I guess I ask that more as like a hypothetical, I don't know, not a hypothetical. I always forget what the word is as like, I guess we can all think of what that means for us. Like at first, mm-hmm. you know, I actually misread it at first. Like the first few times I read this, I was like a rehearsing for the audience. It can provoke a rehearsing for the audience. And somehow that like still worked for me.
Yeah, like, I can see how that still works.
Because it was like hearing something out of context, and in this case, hearing the Imperial March out of context, like at least for me as a viewer, it makes me rethink the context of the Imperial March, or it makes mm-hmm. me rehearse something about what the Imperial March means to me. Okay, I'm going to keep reading. Indeed, the recontextualized source of such underscore as source music may turn out to reside as much in nonfictional reality as some fictional diegesis. So what does this March mean to Han in this moment?
I think in this moment, it's for Han, it's more like kind of the hope of getting out, because at this moment he's, you know, he's hiding from the Empire, the stormtroopers who are trying to capture him because he's trying to go illegally off planet. And it's a way for him to, first of all, get off the world and escape probable capture. But then also kind of that hope of, you know, if I get off the world, if I can make it as a pilot, I can then come back and get Kira off as well. So I think it's that, you know, kind of hopeful way out type of thing.
Yeah. I mean, he definitely hears it. He's definitely inspired by it because he goes on immediately to sign up for the army or for the Empire, for the infantry or whatever. And it reminds me a lot of, like, obviously military recruitment in on Earth, and this picture of all the possibilities and opportunities that await people if they enlist. And hearing the Imperial March later, when we cut to him a few years later, like being blown, you know, basically in the heat of this Mimban battle, like, and we hear the Imperial March in it the way that we are more used to it. It's sort of like Instagram versus reality. It's like we hear the happy version of the Imperial March when, you know, they're trying to recruit people, but then the actual reality of what it's like to be part of this organization is not quite as idyllic.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely is that, like, you know, what you think you're signing up for and then what it ends up happening to be type of thing. And because there's very, very little music between those two cues, there's, like, I think
that's true,
some strings and like Han's theme once as he gets his name. Other than that, there's no music between those two moments. So I think it works really well in contrasting kind of the picture of what you are expecting and then what it ends up actually looking like when you get there.
Yeah. And it's definitely, yeah, the contrast feels very intentional for sure.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Do you know about the background of how this cue came to be?
Not really. I mean, it's not the first time that we have a diegetic version of the Imperial March in Star Wars. The first time was in an early episode of Rebels.
I actually have that. I have that ready to play.
It's a very different version of it. But in terms of like this particular piece being used at this particular moment, I'm assuming either John Powell or the director or directors, because I don't know where in the process this happened, if it was before or after the director change. Someone's like, oh, we're going to have this Imperial recruitment ad. Let's have this happy version of the Imperial March. So I'm not sure exactly how that happened, but.
Oh, interesting. Okay. I have some background on that and I will share that in a bit.
Ooh.
But the reason I think that's interesting is because your abstract, which I will continue, we'll continue making our way through, because you say some very interesting things about a certain style of music, like a certain style of British Imperial music that, like, it was so spot on to what the, to what I've heard John Powell talk about in interviews. And I'm like, oh, you must have known that that was an intention. But anyway, you heard it all in the music. So, yeah. Okay. That's very interesting. Let's get into that actually. Okay. This presentation, it's not this one, but the one that this abstract is for. This podcast episode is like a preview to the presentation. Let's just call it, because the presentation's not happening for a few months. This presentation explores the implications of rehearing an iconic theme, John Williams's Imperial March, through two in-universe instances: David Glenn Russell's Empire Day from Rebels, the TV show, and John Powell's Empire Recruitment from Solo. These cues both reimagine the minor mode leitmotif as major mode musical propaganda. Through close analysis, we demonstrate two contrasting approaches to diegeticization. Parodic hyperchromaticization of the theme's non-functional tonality in Rebels, which I will play in a second. I'm actually curious how similar people will, how different people will feel these two things are. And nostalgic diatonic hypercorrection for Solo's military recruitment ad, which is what the what we're focusing on today. By cannily channeling the nobilmente style of Elgar slash Walton, which we'll explain all of these in a second, these cues resurface a subtextual source of Williams's theme, Edwardian Pax Britannica style nationalism. I'll stop right there. What is Edwardian Pax Britannica style nationalism?
So we were referring to like those like imperial marches and stuff from particularly the beginning of the 20th century and into the middle as well, of like this kind of glory to the empire, which is actually the name of the rebels' cue, like empire is the best, like that type of kind of very nationalistic music that was coming out of Britain around that time.
Yeah. Let me play a clip from William Walton's Crown Imperial. I know you're very familiar with these pieces. If there's a more representative section, just tell me to skip around.
I think this section's good.
Yeah. So that's a little taste. So William Walton is one of these composers from the turn of the century. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I know him mostly for his viola concerto, but he wrote a lot of crown stuff for the monarchs, I guess you could call it. Here's another one called Orb and Scepter. That title is endlessly funny to me. I don't know why. I can't take it seriously. It's funny because this reminds me of the medal ceremony at the end of A New Hope.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Williams is very upfront about his kind of Walton connection with particularly End of New Hope.
Absolutely.
So.
Yes. Okay. So the other main composer that this sounds a lot like is Elgar. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to tell, okay, I'm going to share a little bit. I'm pulling up my notes right now. I'm going to share something that I heard in a John Powell interview. So okay. I don't want to get his words wrong. All right. First of all, according to John Powell, what we hear in Solo, just to remind you, which is this, it was sort of a last minute decision, and it was sort of like a throwaway, like they were at a recording session and an editor was like, hey, here's an idea. Can you whip up like a happy Imperial March here for this thing? And so they were at a recording session and, John Powell was like, oh, sure. sure. And here's the thing about John Powell. He's very like anti, first of all, he's British. And second of all, he has a lot of anti-British imperialism, proclivities. So he, is very critical of the British Empire. And he has said in this interview, and I'll put the link in the show notes, it's from Resistance Broadcast. It's really funny. Okay, so first of all, He says, to know John Williams' music, you have to know that he is a big Edward Elgar fan, which mm-hmm. he definitely is on the record. And by the way, for the record, I am an Elgar fan too. I love Elgar's music. The British stuff, probably less than some of his other not so nationalist stuff. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so John Powell says, if you want to look geopolitically at it, you can say the empire. You can also say the British Empire. And the British, I've had a particular problem with the British Empire, not as many problems as the millions of people who were killed by them. But, you know, it's one of those things where in the pack, I love Elgar. And if you watch The Last Night of the Proms, which is like this big London music festival, and the last night of the proms is like there's always this big concert. And they always play Land of Hope and Glory, which is Pomp and Circumstance number one, or at least mm-hmm. it's the trio section of that, which you might know, everyone, from Graduating. and it's a stirring piece of music that is kind of sort of a terrible thing that we have stirred, a kind of nationalistic sort of furthers with for so long that I was making a kind of anti-British Empire joke. So he specifically modeled the Imperial Recruitment ad music in Solo after Elgar's Pomp and Circumstance.
That would make sense because Pomp and Circumstance also starts in E flat major. So yeah.
this would be a good time. This is a recording from Last Night of the Proms, so they get very into this. I'm like getting high school flashbacks. My graduation was like 4 hours long. It's like, oh my God, this is on loop. Okay, so I'll let that play in the background while I continue telling the story. And knowing that John Williams is a big fan of Elgar, and everybody says that this particular tune, the Imperial March, comes from this one of his love, another one of his love. Basically, he's saying people call the Imperial March out for being like inspired by all these other composers and whatever. It's a common, obviously, John Williams is inspired by a lot of composers. So John Powell says, I sat down at the piano while we were actually recording, and it was an innocent question from the editor. And so I sketched something very briefly out. And my orchestrator, John Ashton Thomas, who's another English guy, said, yeah, we can make this really Elgar-like. We worked out a few chord sequences. And about an hour later, we put it in front of the orchestra and they played through it. And that was that. And he thought, why not make John Williams' Imperial March sound like one of his other loves? That it was, he's never been like mm-hmm. the Imperial March specifically is usually referenced more in relationship to like Holst, or I don't know, he said Russians, and I'm not really sure what he meant by Russians, but now John Powell, being a big fan of both of them, thought it would be a funny joke to turn it into an Elgar thing. Apparently John Williams he didn't get it at first because he didn't see it in the context of the movie. And mm-hmm. so it's not on the original, it's not on the normal version of the album. Because in John Powell's words, and I don't know exactly how this went down, John Williams was like, what the hell is this? But then after he saw it in the movie, it seemed like he was okay with it. And that's why it's on the mm-hmm. deluxe edition. But but yeah, so this is a very intentional, like, Pomp and Circumstance. It takes after Pomp and Circumstance very intentionally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can definitely hear that in the music. And that was, like, the first thing I thought when I heard it the first time. I'm like, that kind of sounds like Imperial March combined with Pomp and Circumstance.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, it's kind of just squishing the two of them together.
Yeah. There's something to, like, the tempo of this, too. Mm-hmm. Like, it's very fast. It's pretty fast.
Mm-hmm.
It's peppy.
Mm-hmm.
I love this swell here. It's so... Okay, that part where it, like, swells and then goes to, like, the upper strings is so, it's so, like, Elgarian. I don't know how else to put it.
It really is.
Let me see if I can find, like, right now this is the Elgar Pomp and Circumstance. Already, it sounds so similar. The cymbal crashes are also another carryover.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously, all of the above, they're all marches. So that already is something that they have in common, regardless mm-hmm. of how they're orchestrated. I mean, let me play the Star Wars Rebels version, because I think there is a lot of similarity still. Like, in a broad strokes way,
mm-hmm.
there are similarities, but there are also some key differences. So how would you describe the differences between the two Empire Imperial March source music versions? And listeners, if you don't watch, or if you haven't watched Star Wars Rebels, it's on Disney Plus. It's this is from season one, and mm-hmm. Or you can look up Glory to the Empire, which is the name of the track. So how would you, what do you think is similar and what do you think is different about those two versions?
Yeah, so I think in terms of similarities, they're obviously both major, or these like bright, happy, celebrate the empire type of marches. And that's really for me where a lot of the similarities end, because when you like start getting into like the details of the music, you start noticing more and more that there's like all these changes that both composers made in different ways from the original. The Rebels version, just for a little context, is used twice in the episode, which is called Empire Day. I think it's episode 8 of the first season. The first time it's used on a HoloNet broadcast, so very similarly to the solo example. And in that case, it does have that kind of also, they change the quality of the sound as well for mm-hmm. that. And then the second time, it's less obviously diegetic music, and it's used under a parade to celebrate the empire. This particular Rebels version emphasizes the percussion a lot more than in the solo version, for sure. You get a lot more of those cymbal crashes, a lot, like the percussion's just kind of, I think, maybe mixed higher within the recording. Lots of brass, lots of winds as well. And then the strings are kind of just hidden there under the surface. So orchestrationally, they're very different. It's kind of more fanfare-y in Rebels, which makes sense because it's used in a parade instead of just in a recruitment ad. It's more chromatic as well.
Where what do you
mean
by that?
Solo version. So like there are more notes that aren't in the key that the piece is in. Whereas like the solo version, it's very diatonic And there are very few chromatic notes, and those that are there, like passing tones or neighbor tones or something, that they just come in briefly and then go away. See, what else can I say about it? The Rebels version also kind of goes off and does its own thing after it goes through the Imperial March like twice or something. It goes off into this other kind of fanfare-y type of music as well. So there's more to the cue in the Rebels version than there is in the solo version.
Right, and you mean like, you mean like this percussion. Goodness. Do you remember if it's the same like cue playing in both times?
I believe it is. It's a very shortened version of it in the Holonet version, because it's like announcing the parade is going to be happening. And so once like that announcement's done, or maybe it might even get interrupted by like one of the like rebellion supporters kind of taking over the broadcast. But it's a shortened version of, I think, just it plays from the beginning of the cue to whenever it
Interesting.
gets cut off.
Interesting. Okay. I'm going to, it's been a while since I finished watching Rebels, but I will definitely put what the episode this is in the show notes so that people can, I mean, I recommend watching this episode, not only because Rebels is a good TV show, but, and it's not that many seasons, but I think like one thing that nearly everyone I talk to is interested in when it comes to Star Wars music is the diegetic music in Star Wars. And the Imperial March in particular is, I mean, I remember in Solo, like everyone was talking about it. Like, did you hear, did you catch that? Like the Imperial March was in Solo, like, but played over the speaker. Like it was at the time, it was sort of like, it was a big deal. And it is a big deal because not only is it a diegetic instance of like Jedi Rocks or Cantina Band or Canto Bight or something that is clearly like a Max Rebo song or something, which we love Max Rebo, but that clearly it doesn't break any narrational levels. And hearing something that we're used to hearing in the score in the, I'm just repeating your abstract at this point. I was going to say repeating something from the score, but making it known that the characters are hearing it too, provokes a rehearing, as some would say. No, really though, like it does provoke like something in viewers, and you know, maybe a lot of us have seen Solo a number of like, it's maybe old news now that it doesn't seem as it doesn't stand out as much as it maybe originally did. But I am now fascinated any by any time the Imperial March shows up diegetically. And the thing is, like, when it's done, it's such a rare event that it at this point it still is an event. I hope that doesn't change. I'm glad that it's an event. I'm glad it's not like we're just hearing the Force theme over the speakers all the time. That would be really sad day for me. But but it does, or I guess I'll throw this back at you listeners. Like, what changes in the Imperial March when you hear it in the score versus when you are hearing it in an Imperial Empire recruitment ad? What do you think it means to the people hearing it? And I mean, introduces a little bit of discomfort.
Yeah, for sure. And also, like, I was talking with someone about like this whole idea around the time when Solo came out, I think it was with Solo, not with Rebels. And they're like, wait, does this mean that Star Wars actually exists? Like, if the music is crossing over, can we like pretend that means that Star Wars like actually exists somewhere in a galaxy far, far away? Like,
Oh,
I
that's an
mean, why
interesting
not?
question.
Yeah, because like if the music exists in both worlds, and clearly both worlds are existing somewhere.
My brain is tripping right now. So characters hearing their own music. I'm gonna have to think about that. Not saying your friend is wrong. I'm just saying.
I think it was meant more like a joke. Yeah. But like, I was like, yeah. I mean, I guess if you wanted to mean that Star Wars actually exists somewhere in a galaxy far, far away, go for it. I'm like, I don't know how the long time ago part would work out with like the music being written now, but you know, we can go with it.
So my question is like, if we were to complete this analogy or this comparison that John Powell is interjecting on purpose, you know, him saying his own words and in interviews, an anti-British Empire joke, making the Imperial March sound like a patriotic British pomp and circumstance piece of music. Does that imply, or I would like to then hear the other version of pomp and circumstance reharmonized and like rearranged like the score version of the Imperial March. Does that make sense?
Oh,
like the dark version
would be really cool.
Of like, I think that is what would complete the circle. We need this for symbiosis. If any composers or orchestrators are listening, if you do a mock-up, yeah, not that that won't be a major assignment, but but yeah, I would be interested then. And I feel like after hearing Empire Recruitment, after hearing the Imperial March in this style of Elgar and Walton, I feel like it might be, I can more easily reverse engineer the Elgar and Walton to take it back to the Imperial March. Mm-hmm. And that's actually something that you continue to say in your abstract, sort of, or maybe you can correct me, but I'll continue reading and then tell me what you mean. Because I want to find a way to watch your talk. Like, I'm very interested in your topic, obviously. And I think a lot of listeners will be interested too. Okay, so you say, by cannily channeling, that's such a frank way of putting it.
Oh, yes.
We love Frank Lehman on this show. They wrote this abstract together, so it's just funny to hear the Lehmanisms. By cannily channeling the nobilmente style of Elgar and Walton, these cues resurface a subtextual source of Williams's theme, Edwardian Pact Britannica style nationalism, and with it, the complex relation of imperial versus revolutionary politics in Star Wars generally. I'm curious about the phrase, these cues resurface a subtextual source of Williams's theme. Is that sort of like what we were just talking about? How we can reverse engineer?
Yeah, that's kind of what we were going for with like, you know, we know that Williams was a huge fan of Elgar and Walton. He was probably very familiar with these kind of imperial marches that they were writing. And so it wouldn't be surprising if the original source and the original inspiration for the Imperial March was from that style of music.
And then put through this like filter of chromaticism and other things to make it more score-like. And by score-like, I guess I mean, I think of score as like a narrational level that guides the listener or the viewer a little bit more. So being like, here's a nationalist march, but I'll make it really obvious that it's a bad thing.
Yeah. I think that's probably what he was going for. I mean, obviously he has never outright said that, but it definitely seems like, you know, he's taking this reference and then being like, okay, now I'm going to make it obvious that it's for the bad guys, that these are the bad guys. They're not, you know, the ones we should be cheering for. We should be cheering for the rebellion. And so he kind of puts it through that filter before eventually like it comes out in Empire Strikes Back for the first time.
It's so interesting. I wonder how many people like in the 70s and 80s were making that connection, or if they were.
Yeah, because I mean, hearing, like, putting it through definitely kind of like it hides that.
Yeah, it does hide it. Absolutely. It definitely hides it. And I think that's why something like the diegesis, or, you know, making it source music in Solo and the way that John Powell did it specifically, it is like showing the emperor with no clothes. Basically, that's what provokes us, or that's what provokes me more than just hearing it in the score. And I think that's why, for me, I know some people don't like it, or, you know, people have different feelings on when score shows up in source, and that's valid. Like, it bothers some people. It doesn't bother other people. I like this instance because it reveals something intentional about the nature of the empire, if that makes sense. Like, it's not just like a random cover, a random arrangement of it, or it's not just the same version that we hear in the score, but played on. Like, to me, that would be weird. But the fact that it's something new, and something new, it tells us something. And the reason it's like provokes me to think, I guess, is because it sounds so noble and happy, I guess, and inspiring. It makes me think, like, well, in films and in Star Wars in particular, when we think of like the villains or the antagonists, like if we take the most obvious, the most extreme example being Palpatine, the Emperor, it seems like he's someone who would revel in this like evil sounding music. Like, he must listen to like evil stuff all day, and he would revel in this Imperial March, or, you know, even his own theme sounding so like dark. Like, we think of the dark people embracing their darkness and knowing that like wanting to sound grotesque in a way. And the Imperial March is one of those like really foreboding, ominous sounding themes, like one of the most foreboding sounding themes in Star Wars. And hearing it so happy here is sort of like makes me do a double take, like, oh, I guess maybe the villains, like the antagonists in Star Wars, they don't see themselves as like the version of the Imperial March that we get normally. They see themselves as like, they think that they project this happy, you know, they hear it like this. Like, it's scarier to me to conceive of the fact that they might hear it like this and we might hear it in that grotesque version. If that makes sense.
Yeah, I think it makes sense. And like, also, I mean, from like a strictly strategic point of view, they need people in the Imperial Navy. Like, they need those soldiers. So even if they do like revel in that kind of evil darkness, and they love that, which I think the Emperor definitely does, like, he definitely thrives with the evil. They still need people in the army to be keeping the peace, and they're not going to get that if they're playing this like really evil, negative sounding version of their music in the recruitment ad. So I think it serves its purpose. I mean, obviously Han goes and joins the Imperial Navy, so it works.
Yeah. Okay. Now I'm thinking of, okay, you just made me think of a few more things. One of them being that I think the Emperor does prefer the grotesque version of everything. I think he definitely revels in the darkness. And I think a lot of characters in Star Wars, particularly the force sensitive dark side people, definitely do. I mean, they draw on anger and hate and and pain and all of that stuff. So them excluded, I think if they are the puppet masters, like Palpatine is definitely a puppet master if I've ever seen one.
Oh yes.
the things that he creates under his puppet mastering, like the Empire, they don't need to be on the same level as him. So they probably don't appreciate the grotesque nature of what they're doing. Like, they believe that they're doing something good for the glory of the empire, you know, for order, for, you know, just keeping the peace. Like, they think that they're doing something good. Like, the empire obviously is the enemy in Star Wars, but in all the ancillary materials, like the books and any of the like POV empire stuff, like, they all personally have justifiable to them reasons for being in the empire. And obviously the empire heavily recruits and preys on like lonely people like Han and people who just need, you know, some sort of stability and whatever. So like, you know, fault the system and some people get drawn into it like Han. And so, you know, what Han is definitely not the same level of like puppet master imperial as someone way, way above him, or like someone like Palpatine. So on that level, like on the subordinate level, like people who are maybe just like, you know, in the army, honestly, we could make this connection here on Earth with many empires, which I think is also the point with this. They are hearing the patriotic version. They are feeling the patriotism. And so there are, many layers.
And I think even like in Rebels, we see like Imperial characters switching sides and realizing that like the reasons they joined the Empire don't really exist. They're realizing that there's things wrong with the Empire. And so I think that's definitely true, that they are generally, I mean, once you get higher up, obviously they love the evil and all, but like on a lower level, they definitely are seeing like the positives, bringing order to the galaxy. I mean, coming right off of the Clone Wars, where there's this huge, like, galaxy-wide war, like people wanted the peace and people wanted there to be no more wars, and the Empire was offering that. And so I think that's probably why a lot of them were joining. And so they would be the people to get this kind of nationalistic style music and be like, see, I told you I'm doing something right. So,
Plus this is propaganda. So, you know, something we learn in a lot of the books that are post Clone Wars, but like, you know, BBY before the Battle of Yavin, a lot of the people in that era, or even people after the Battle of Yavin, like, you know, I'm thinking of like Bloodline, and I'm thinking of like some of those Leia books, or they were not alive during the Clone Wars. Like, it's like a generation of people who didn't see the Clone Wars and the transition to the Empire, but have heard through the stories of like, well, the Empire wasn't that bad. The Republic also was kind of ineffectual. So, which is true. That's not true. So like the stories, like, it's hard to see like one coherent version of history, and people can, and also due to the nature of propaganda, like a lot of people, even in this time where Han's being recruited, are not necessarily understanding the full picture, and they might believe that the Empire is, you know, keeping peace. And in some cases, compared to the Clone Wars, in some instances, they are, for some places.
But like, even like the Rebels version of the Imperial March also kind of fulfills the same propagandistic type of role, because it's like the Empire is throwing this big parade celebrating the factory on the planet, and like, you guys basically saying you guys are helping keep the peace in the galaxy and helping to prevent wars from happening. So I think that that's kind of the major goal of these diegetic versions, is that, you know, you got, this is the right time, this is the right thing, and this is a good thing. And then the score version that the audience hears when we're watching these films, you realize, no, it's not a good thing, if that makes sense.
It definitely makes sense. I mean, as we hear right here. I think that's like one of the darkest scenes in Star Wars.
I kind of got funny looks in the theater, because like, I laughed at that moment,
Why did you
because it's
laugh?
coming right off. It's the joke. It's coming
Yeah.
right off of that
You got the music
happy,
joke.
bright. Yeah, I got the music joke. It's like this happy, bright Imperial March, and then all of a sudden this really dark and gritty and disturbing almost version. And I just like it was in the theater laughing,
You're
and then the
cracking up
person
in the
next to me
theater
just
while people are
kind
getting blown up.
of the person next to me was like, "What's wrong with you?" I'm like, it's funny. I got
No.
Powell's joke.
Now it would have been really funny if you like went to it with a bunch of like music nerds who got the joke at the same time. And so it was just like a whole row of you just laughing and no one else. Then you could,
Yeah.
yeah, that would
I
have
think
been.
my sister did chuckle a little bit too, if I remember correctly. But we were like the only ones in the theater that really like got that joke.
That's funny. Oh, I had a question.
Yeah.
Did David Glenn Russell write that Rebels version of Empire Day, not Kevin Kiner?
That's what we are thinking. We found like a kind of a chart that gave like who wrote what cue, because Kevin Kiner, he's the main composer for Clone Wars, Rebels, and Bad Batch, basically all the animated shows. But he does have people working under him, including his son, at least one of his sons, if not both of his son, both of his sons might
Sean?
also, yeah, Sean, like Sean did the Thrawn theme, for
Yeah.
example. And so he had, especially with Clone Wars, that was kind of before he had his son joining him until the obviously the end of Clone Wars. I think he did have a son a little bit, but the kind of bulk of the work on Clone Wars and then into Rebels, he had these other people also working with him as well.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. I believe his sons both work with him now, at least
Yeah.
for the Bad
Yeah, I think
Batch.
I think Sean does more than his other son, who's I'm totally blanking on his name.
I'm blanking on his name too, but I definitely do know that Sean wrote the Thrawn theme for in Rebels. Do know that.
It's a very good theme.
I have a lot of thoughts
I'm
about it. Do you have anything else to say about the minutes, like other than this hyper specific topic that we've been covering?
trying to think. I mean, like the stuff that comes before it, I think is interesting in the in that it's Powell using not only his own themes but also Williams's themes that he wrote for the film, and like how he kind of combines them and uses them all and makes them all sound like one cohesive piece. That's like
Yeah.
really the only other thing that I had.
He does a lot of that during this film, obviously, because John Williams wrote the Han Solo themes. In fact, in these minutes, we hear Han and Kira's theme, which John Powell wrote. And then we hear the young Han Solo searching theme, which John Williams wrote. And then we hear Secrets theme, which is sounds a lot like the beginning of the search of the young Han Solo searching theme, which John Powell wrote. And then we hear the Imperial March, John Williams. And then we hear the young Han Solo heroic version of the theme, which John Williams wrote. And so somehow this is all like all of this happens within 5 minutes. And a lot of it happens very, very subtly and very like quickly and just like shortly.
Yeah. It's really fascinating how he kind of works with all these different themes and makes them all sound like one thing. And I'm like, I mean, I'm not a composer. I've done like two compositions in my entire life and hated doing them both. But it just blows my mind how people can do that, like either co-compose something or with John Williams's involvement in this particular film, like how they can then work those themes so like subtly and so evenly into their own music. It's just, it's so cool.
I think
Like
co-composing
hats off to
sounds
John
hard.
Powell.
Yeah, seriously. S seriously, I think co-composing for some reason seems harder to me. And I.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Okay, I'm glad I'm not the only one.
I'm like, how does that work? Like, do you break up the movie through cues, or do you like both work on the same cues? Like, how does that work? I
Oh,
don't get it.
well, in this case,
But
John Williams wrote the themes And then
like, and then Powell,
and then John Powell did of, the rest. Yeah. They did spot the film together. And then he, John Williams wrote the suite, the Adventures of Han suite. And then John Powell did the rest. So it was definitely, it was like a much, it was a clearer division of labor. Yeah. But still, I think I would find it hard. Like, I think scoring a Star Wars film would be so difficult, not only because, I mean, for so many reasons, not just this one, but also incorporating something someone else has written means that you have to have, ideally, like a really good grasp on that material as well as your own material. And it's easier to grasp your own material, obviously, because you came up with it. So definitely hats off to John Powell.
Where, like, you know, some themes are very clearly, you know, John Williams style. And then John Powell has a very different style of composition. Definitely. And so being able to seamlessly weave those themes in is just, it's really cool. I feel like it's less impressive with Kevin Kiner, because Kevin Kiner's kind of compositional style is more closely, at least to my ears, more closely related to Williams' style. But like John Powell's general, like, music, if you like just listen to him, all of his other stuff, particularly like How to Train Your Dragons and stuff like that, it's very different than what John Williams does with Star Wars. It's a good question. Definitely John Williams is more, oh god, how do I describe this? I'm like TAing a class with Frank on John Williams right now, so like I have the John Williams sound like just in my ear. So like trying to remember John Powell's other stuff, harmonically, it's very different, I think. Just the chord progressions that they tend to favor seem to be very different. But yeah, also just like things like orchestration and just like the composers that they seem to be drawing on for their style. Like Williams is very much like kind of that neo-romantic type of music for, at least for Star Wars. He does other stuff in other films and in his concert works, but for Star Wars, it's very much that neo-romantic. And like, you do still have that with John Powell, but he also has these influences from, you know, more contemporary film composers. So
yeah, it's an
interesting blend of like, how do you then take something that's more neo-romantic and blend that seamlessly into something that's slightly more modern maybe sounding.
And I think the solo film, it really sounds like a blend of, it really sounds like a blend of them. Like it definitely sounds like you can definitely hear the John Powell in there, even though he is trying to channel John Williams. It definitely sounds like a mixture of both of their styles, because it definitely sounds more modern to me.
Oh yes, it definitely does. I like, once the film came out, I like listened to the soundtrack nonstop for several weeks to months afterwards, just kind of dissecting everything and like trying to figure out like, oh, this is definitely John Powell here, and here he's channeling Williams a little bit more. And yeah,
interesting.
And I think with like other composers coming into Star Wars, which might end up being my thesis topic.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I'm not sure if it's going to be solely Star Wars or if I'm also going to include other franchises Williams has started. But looking at just how different composers tackle following John Williams, because Kevin Kiner really, for the most part, especially in Rebels and Bad Batch, he really follows that kind of Williams vein. Clone Wars does have some more like world music influences and stuff in it, more modern influences, but like for the most part, he's very much channeling the Williams. And then Michael Giacchino, yes, he uses Williams's themes, but it's much more modern. In Rogue One, there's a lot more synthesizer, there's a lot more of that kind of Giacchino synthy type of style. And then Powell's kind of this interesting in between the two somewhere. So
oh my gosh, I would love to.
And then there's like Ludwig Göransson and everything he's doing with Mandalorian, and
totally
there's so much there.
Oh my gosh, I would I would love to have a deep dive with you on more of those topics, on like Kevin Kiner and basically anything you just said. You're going to be invited back to the show for sure.
I'm happy to come back.
And yeah, that's great stuff. So before we move on to the Star Wars Music Minute questionnaire, I'll just go over the themes again. And the themes and the soundtrack for those listening. Han and Kira, Young Han Solo, Searching, Secrets, Imperial March, and Young Han Solo, Heroic. And of course, if you want to see these themes, if you want to see melodic reductions of these, transcriptions of these, and in look into the whole Star Wars thematic catalog, you know where to go. franklehman.com/Star Wars. Yes. And you, Frank Lehman actually recommended Samantha for this show. So I have to, I definitely, I thank you, Frank. Thank you for introducing me to Samantha. It's, yeah. And on the soundtrack, if you are following along on the deluxe edition, you'll be able to find The End of Spaceport, Gonna Be a Pilot, Empire Recruitment, and Mimban Battle. Yep. The soundtrack, the deluxe even, version, like, is pretty complete.
Oh, yeah. Like the end of the 5 minutes that we looked at, there's even a little of that, like, I forget exactly what Frank calls the theme, but it's the theme for, like, Beckett and his gang when they first show up at the very end of the 5 minutes as well.
Oh, wait, let's.
Where are we going? Just over that last ridge. Victory is
So this is when Samantha was laughing in the theater. Oh, right here?
Yep, right there.
Yeah. That, I think that's the gang, right? Is that called the gang?
Yeah. That sounds right, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's right. Well, that's the first time someone has been able to fact check my theme list, so thank you. Yes, gotta get to the bitter end of those 5 minutes. All right,
it's really like the last like 5-10 seconds.
Yeah, which means we're gonna get to talk about that next episode. Okay, so before we end, I have to ask you the Star Wars Music Minute questionnaire.
Yeah,
which is the same three questions that I ask every guest since last season. And question number one, in exactly three words, what does Star Wars sound like? Diabolical question.
Very diabolical question. I'd say for me, powerful, evocative, and grandiose, I guess, would be my three.
Cool. Number two, what's something related to Star Wars music or sound that you're interested in and want to learn more about?
I think probably the most interesting thing for me would be to like hear more of like the musician stories and like what is it like recording these scores, and particularly like the sequel films and like particularly Rise of Skywalker, like what is it like sitting in there in the recording sessions hearing these themes and like predicting what's going to be happening in the film based on the themes. Like that's just so interesting to me, and I'd love to like talk to some of the musicians about that, and also like working with Williams and finding out what that's like as well.
Yeah. But Erica Duke Kirkpatrick talked a little bit about that in our first episode, but yeah, I'm really curious if there were like hardcore Star Wars fans that like really knew what they were like crafting fan theories.
Oh yeah. They had to sign NDAs and everything to do the recording. So like they knew it was a possibility that they'd be getting some musical spoilers in there. Mm-hmm. But.
Well, number three, what is a score or soundtrack that you're fond of besides anything Star Wars?
I mean, right now I've been listening to a lot of Williams' other scores just with this class I'm TAing for. But I'd say probably in general, Alexandre Desplat's music. I've been digging into the Shape of Water soundtrack a lot because like as a flutist, his use of the flute just generally is so fascinating because he plays flute and like he knows how to use the instrument. And so it's always so interesting to like hear the extended techniques that he's using and how he blends the instruments, or in the case of Shape of Water, where he kicks the rest of the wind section out and just has 12 flutes. So
I love hearing that. I did not know that he played flute, but
oh yeah, he played professionally for a couple years before switching over to primarily focus on composition. And then his wife has a string quintet that I think is entirely dedicated to playing his music. And they had an album come out a couple years ago, and he plays at least flute and alto flute on that, possibly also bass flute.
That's really cool. I love, yeah. Not that I'm biased, but I love instrumentalist composers who clearly have like an instrument. I feel that way about Johnny Greenwood's music. I'm a string player, so he is a string player and does a lot with like viola, violin, lots of interesting like extended techniques and layering and stuff, and knows how to use the violin in ways that other strings in ways that other composers don't.
So there's like that whole other level of knowledge that comes into it when you write for it, and like I'm hoping to at some point in the near future, the score for Desplat's solo flute piece is available to purchase. So I'm like, I need to buy that and figure out how cool it is to play, because it sounds like it'd be one of those pieces that's just really fun to play and just like the celebration of what the flute is capable of doing. So,
oh, I love that. Yeah. That's so cool. yay, instrumentalists and composers. It's such a specific sound. That's what I appreciate about it. It's a specific, it's a unique sound. It's not necessarily it's not always the most well-rounded sound like that. I feel like those composers aren't necessarily, they can be, but they're not necessarily right out of the box, like jack of all trades composers, but they really have like more of a signature to me. And so.
Yeah. Desplat in particular, like the way he uses low flutes, especially, is just, you can tell it's Desplat just from listening to the textures in the score.
I'm going to listen to him today for sure. I have a bonus question. I'm just curious. If you could encourage listeners to like in this set of 5 minutes, pay attention to like one specific music or sound related thing, like what would you encourage people, you know, like someone who doesn't necessarily know that much about music, or maybe they do, but what's like either your favorite spot or like just...
That's a good question.
It could just be the ad, but
I think probably either the kind of juxtaposition of the ad and then the Battle of Minden versions of the Imperial March, or also the way throughout the beginning part of the scene, the way Powell kind of builds the tension with the music, with like them trying to get through the barrier. And then when Han gets through, but Kira doesn't, and that kind of them saying goodbye to each other, essentially. And then Han going and hiding, and like how Powell kind of plays with the tension in that scene through the use of these themes, but also like the ostinati in the background with the strings at various points. And
awesome. Thank you so much. I just sprung that on you, but thanks. So listeners, if you go back and watch minutes 11 through 15 of Solo a Star Wars Story, a few things to listen for. On that note, where can people find you, or if you're available online, or if people can watch any of your stuff, or
I have a YouTube channel that I'm working on getting up and running that's going to have my senior recital for my undergrad up on it eventually. And then I'm also in the process of creating a website, but that's not up yet. So
cool. I'll just update when you have it,
Yeah. hopefully soon.
Yes. And do let me know, like if the talk that you're going to give, if normal people like me can, buy tickets to it or something, I would be.
I think I'm assuming you can.
Okay.
I can look into that.
And definitely keep us updated on your, like, if when you decide on your thesis and all of that stuff.
I will.
All right. Well, listeners, you can find Star Wars Music Minute anywhere online things are happening. Not really, but a lot of places that online things are happening. And I will not do any more plugs because I'm bad at them. So, oh, you know what? The day this episode comes out, it will be my birthday. So,
that's exciting.
Yes, it is exciting. So hopefully you're all having a good day on my birthday. And yeah, thanks for listening. I'm just so grateful for going into season 3 of the show, and we'll be back next week to talk about Solo minutes 16 through 20 on Star Wars Music Minute.